Happy birthday to you.
I think this is actually the first, what is it? It's 11:10, so there's only 50 minutes left in my birthday, and I actually have not been sung happy birthday to, so that works. And I'm not taking any, I'm not soliciting any singing either, so.
We had harmonies planned.
Although you two are both very good singers, so actually it would not be a bad thing. But, yes, it's my birthday today, and thank you to everybody. Thank you, guys. And Craig, who brought us a cake?
Todd Manley
brought us a cake. Looks delicious. And my guests in the studio have already said they can't have any, so that is a little bit depressing. So
it's more for you. It's
more for Craig. Craig can't have any. I'm guessing it's not gluten free.
It is not.
It is not gluten free. Esmeralda, are you gonna?
Yeah, bring it up here.
So this is the loneliest cake ever. All of a sudden, no, thank you.
I will make it friendly.
You and me both. We just need to take a selfie of us just both shoving our faces into this cake.
Yeah. I'll be its best friend.
We have Representative Robert Martwick on the show tonight. Talk a little bit about what's going on. An interesting story that has, I think, evolved from a choice that was made, but I've been trying to catch Brandon C. Price up with that. First of all, Brandon C. Price, I realized last time you were on, I did not talk enough about VAMP, so let's make sure as often as we can to promote your amazing show MCL Chicago.
I've got like a code something, some sort of code going on. So
okay,
let me get to
that. The fact that you're just sort of not figuring out what how you want to promote it, it's like it's something.
I hear it's great.
Well, Representative Martwick is also a musician, so I think he would love your show.
You got to come check it out.
It's a music, comedy, and drinking show. It's all improvised. It's like if Wayne Brady was.
Those are like three of my favorite things in the world.
We got them all.
He's got them all.
Yeah, just every Friday and Saturday, 10:30. It's off the Belmont Red Line, like Belmont and Sheffield.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, we've been going. We're just entered our third year. And there's some sort of, code for August. I'll look it up. I'm sure you could just email me.
I can see now why it took me to the end of the show. I think last time you said tweet at you also.
Yeah, you can do that. I'm sorry. I'm so excited about the topic we're going to get into. I wasn't prepared to do my actual job for myself and pimp the show. It's the greatest show ever. Tweet VAMP_Chicago. Just follow. Just get into it. Once you do, you're just going to really appreciate what you did for yourself.
I agree with that. I've seen the show many times. Let's see the show together.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do that. Okay. Before we get into the conversation and many of the legislators, like people, I think we're drawn to drama. I think that there's no denying that. That's what sells, right? Is contention and conflict. But before we do that, we have Matt on the line who wanted to say he has a question. Hey, Matt, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Really quick, what did the wonderful call skater write down for my question?
Just question, Matt. Question.
Oh, well, I got a question for you. Do you know what today is? It's your birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Patty. Happy birthday to you.
Aw, thank you.
And many, many more, even though you're only 25.
Oh, well done. Thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Have a great day, and I know I've got no voice. It's fine.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me? That was very well done.
There was pitch there. There was timbre. Very impressive.
There was joy. There was mirth. And I'll take it all. And there was kindness.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Have a
great
night.
Day, folks.
Thank you. By the way, before we again, my mother. I thanked my mom today for having me. Do you do that when you it's your birthday? It's the first thing I thought of when I saw her. I'm like, thank you.
I think for the next 30 years, I'm gonna do that now. I appreciate the first year, but that was your choice. Taking care of me for the next three decades, that was on me, and so I appreciate you making that happen.
Fair enough. Griffin does the same thing. He thanks me a lot. Griffin will just walk into my room when I'm getting ready for work or something and go, I love you, Mommy. It's the coolest thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just call your moms and say I love you.
I'm looking forward to that.
When is your birthday?
February 28th.
All right, I'll try to remember.
Pisces, March 2nd over here.
Yeah,
nice.
And same thing?
Yeah, well.
We're both Pisces?
Yeah.
All right, then.
And that's like full-on Pisces, too, right in the middle of the arc there.
I'm going to call and remind you both to say thank you to your mothers.
All right.
Please do.
I want to thank the people of Illinois who work very hard to provide services. And I know many of them had delays in payment. And a lot of agencies had to take out loans. They couldn't pay their employees. Some people have to relocate. There's one woman who posted on Facebook yesterday that the agency she works for, they can't afford the rent anymore because of Illinois' budget. And she will now have to work out in the suburbs. She works out of Humboldt Park, and they're consolidating the offices. And she has to now commute about 2.5 hours a day because of the rent. So when we see stories like that, we go, these legislators, they said they gave us a budget and it's not cutting it. What did Comptroller Munger do not too long ago, Representative Martwick?
Well, starting back in March of this year, when we were closing in on the budget. She announced, well, we were closing in on a year without a budget. She announced that she was going to take the initiative on her own without really any authority to do so. And she was going to place the pay of the legislators in the same process that these service providers have to go through. So in other words, when the service providers are not only suffering the indignity of getting these big cuts, but then they're also, their pay is being delayed months and months and months. And so she said, legislators, if you can't figure it out, then you're going to wait months and months for your pay as well. And so that started in March, and it's continued till the president.
But that sounds great to voters. I mean, what a wonderful, I mean, yeah, do your jobs. You know, right. If other people aren't getting paid, why should you?
That's right. And I think that that is, on its face, I think is a very fair sentiment. I think people should feel like that. I think the problem, though, is that the policy is horrible. For those people who think it's a great idea, if you thought about it a little bit, you'd realize it's probably the worst thing you could do to a system of democracy. And the reason is that there are many legislators who treat the job as a full-time job. It's easy enough to treat as a full-time
job. Yeah, but you guys are making like six figures, and you know, you guys are like, you can use your job to get you other kind of perks and stuff. And
yeah,
what's the big deal?
Right. Well, there are those of us in the legislature who have good outside employment, and we have a decent salary outside of it. So I myself, for 13 months, I didn't accept my own pay because I thought, well, you know, it was the right thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to suffer along with everybody else. But I have the luxury of being able to do that. The problem is that there are people who represent poor and middle-class neighborhoods. Remember that we have 118 districts in Illinois. And those districts are cut, the lines are cut, and many of these are poor, whether they're poor west side or south side districts in the city of Chicago, poor suburban districts, or even poor downstreet rural districts. And so these legislators, they come from these districts. Many times this is their only source of income. This is their only job. It's easy to say, oh, go get another job, but when you only have about 4 months a year to actually work at that other job, there aren't a whole lot of people who are interested in hiring you for that. So most, I don't know, actually I don't know the percentage, but there are many legislators who treat this as a full-time job. And so what she's doing by denying them pay.
Well, I mean, but like you said, you're only 4 months out of the year, you're not even in Springfield. I mean, it's not like you're doing anything the rest of the time. It's not like people have your numbers and are calling your offices and have other obligations to the constituents in your neighborhoods.
Yeah, that's actually, I wish
they're
that.
Not, they're not calling
wife,
like 24 hours a day.
My wife wishes that were the case. We continue to work very hard throughout the summer. Today I drove down to Normal, Illinois for a hearing, a task force hearing on unclaimed life insurance benefits with Treasurer Frericks. I drove back, so 2 hours down, 3 hours at the hearing, 2 hours back. I went to a CPS budget hearing, which I'm not required to do any of that. None of that's a requirement. But I think my constituents expect me to dig in and to do the best job, to attend hearings so that I'm well-informed and I make good decisions. I think that's what I ought to be doing. So, and that's, again, you've got many people. So a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, Jaime Andrade, treats this as a full-time job. He's not a wealthy person. He doesn't have outside income. And there's Letitia Wallace, who's a single mother who happens to have a PhD, but she's a single mother from the Rockford area, serves a very poor African-American constituency. You have Sonia Harper from the city of Chicago. You have Chad Hayes, who's a Republican from the Danville area.
Well, he certainly, I'm sure, approves of this move. And
whether he does or whether he approves of it or not does not make it good a good policy.
Now, well, let me take a quick break and find out what the impact is of telling our legislators, unless you do what we want you to do, we're not going to pay you. More after this with Representative Robert Martwick and Brandon C. Price, the mastermind genius behind VAMP, Chicago's longest running. I don't know. Can I say longest running? Because I know there are other ones.
I mean, the longest
Chicago's
running
favorite
version of our show.
Yes, the longest version of their show.
Exactly what we do. We've been doing it the longest.
Music, comedy, and drinking show, VAMP at MCL. Go to vampchicago.com for more information. More on in just a moment on WGN 720. It's pretty late. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We had been hosting a Budget Crisis Corner every Friday night. And that only lasted about, what, a month? And then the state of Illinois, our legislators, came to an agreement with the governor of Illinois, Governor Rauner, to a stopgap budget, a short-term budget that only lasts until January. Right. And before that, Comptroller Munger had said that she was not going to pay, that she was no longer going to pay the legislators, that they were going to be in the back of the line.
What she said was that the pay would be delayed for legislators until we agreed to a budget.
And then you agreed on a stopgap budget.
Well, it was apparently, to her liking, it wasn't a good enough budget, so she decided that she's going to keep the delay of the payment.
Is willy-nilly a legislative term? I'm just curious. Is there any way to use
from the Latin Willis Nillis?
It just seems a little willy nilly. I would like to submit that to the legislators. Hold on, we have a question from a listener.
Okay.
Hi, Marie. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What do you want to ask?
I'm just calling because really, all of us in the state don't care that they're not getting paid.
Right.
If they were doing their job, which would mean we have a balanced budget, they'd get their salaries. I don't care why it's not happening. It's just not happening.
But
we're the laughing stock of the country.
But why would you? What do you think? Do you think what reason would there be for them not to have a budget? That they're not talking about it at all, or they don't agree? What's more likely?
Well, it seems that they don't agree.
So how do you force someone to agree?
In a democracy where you're elected to represent the interests of your community. Marie, do you mind if I ask you where you're from? What part of the state?
Palatine.
Okay. So Palatine's a pretty conservative part of the state. And if I'm not sure exactly who your representative is. I might have an idea, but I'm pretty sure I think it's Tom Morrison. Tom is a very conservative Republican who is very, very anti-tax. So in order to pass a balanced budget, we, the Democrats, are proposing a tax increase because we have to balance the budget. Now, Tom is very opposed to that tax increase. Would you suggest then, and I do believe that Tom treats this job as his only source of income in order to pay his mortgage and feed his family and stuff. Would you suggest then that he vote against the interest of his constituency just so that he can get paid? Because that's agreeing, right? But then he wouldn't really be representing you or the interest of your constituencies if the general consensus, nobody ever agrees 100%, but if the general will of the people in Palatine is we don't want to pay any more taxes, would you suggest that Tom say, yeah, but I got to get paid?
Right.
No, not at all.
Okay, yeah. What you don't want is...
I think he needs to represent us, but
yes,
I don't...
Yes, Marie, wait, hold on. What you don't want is outside pressure on politicians to make decisions. If you do that, Marie, then you're going to have a corruption of the system. When representatives are forced into decisions that go against the will of their constituents, that's bad for democracy and it's bad for you. I did not take my pay for over a year because I could afford not to do that. But the last thing you want to do is you want to push politicians who can't afford to do that into bad decisions.
And my concern, Marie, too, is that don't you think that we often talk about it's only the wealthy that can run. We do want more, citizens to have the possibility of sort of reflecting our values, too, Marie, right?
Correct.
So if it's only going to be people who can afford to not take a paycheck, it's more likely that we'll only have the wealthy running for office.
Right.
If this is a possibility that we withhold their pay.
In Palatine I know that it's a suburb, but it's not a super rich suburb, right? It's more of a working class type place. Am I correct on that?
Right, middle
class, right? Yeah. So here you've got a representative who is living on a middle class income, raising his family from the neighborhood. Do you want a guy like that to be forced out of the legislature to say, "Well, I can't work for free, so let's just let some rich guy run"? Could that guy identify with the struggles that people go through on a daily basis in Palatine? Shouldn't you have someone like you that you can vote for?
I don't want them to be forced out, but I want our government and our state to act like a corporation. We can't not do our jobs and continue to get
I know,
paid.
Marie, but here's the thing. So doing a budget is one of our responsibilities, but The doing the budget requires agreement. And right now there is a fundamental disagreement, right? Governor Rauner says, gut the unions. The Democrats, I'm one of them, says, we don't want to do that. The people who elected me said, don't do that. So, he's saying, I'm not going to attend to the financial condition of the state. We can't balance a budget. Everyone agrees. Even the governor agrees you can't balance the budget without a tax increase. He won't even talk about it until we give in to his demands. So you're at this impasse. Is that the fault of 118 representatives?
Yeah, it's a rough one. Marie, I have to take a quick break. Thank you so much for calling. I know that I feel like Brandon probably wanted to jump in too, but this is a complicated.
I'm a mic hog. I'm sorry.
Marie, have a great night. More after this on 720 WGN. Dave, we'll try to get to you after this. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studios, laughing because I just hit whatever button was in front of me that time. I tried to plan ahead of time, but I didn't. But this makes me giggle because this is a song from kind of from my childhood. And tomorrow morning, I'm interviewing someone that I adored in my childhood and still adore. I'm interviewing Ralph Macchio tomorrow, the star of Karate Kid and also played Johnny Boy in The Outsiders.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
I'm very excited about that.
Wax on, wax off.
Wax on. Sweep the leg. That's the other one. That's the bad guy. We are talking about the state of Illinois, the situation that we are in. We stopped doing our budget crisis corner on Fridays, but we're thinking about starting a new segment called Crisis Corner, Now What? And the now what is that even though Comptroller Munger said she would not pay the legislators in the state of Illinois until they pass a budget, she continues to withhold their pay, even though they did pass a temporary budget, because that was not quite what she meant, I guess.
Right.
As I am terming the willy-nilly the behavior, I guess. Willy-nilly. What is that action? Is it called a move, a decision by the comptroller's office?
I guess, yeah. I mean, it's unilateral. She doesn't have the legal authority to do it. I mean, it could be challenged in a court, and I think she would lose in that. But
well, Dave has some thoughts on whether or not you guys should get paid. Dave, what do you think?
Well, I'm actually a federal employee, and so I've dealt with budget crunch before. I'm actually considered not a first responder, but like essential services. And so whenever there's a budget that's not passed federally, I can end up being furloughed where I have to report to work and I don't get paid.
Yeah.
Well, you get paid. Your pay gets delayed. This is the same thing with the legislators. Yes.
But if you have a vacation day, let's say that you have your vacation plan for the same time that they plan the furlough. If you decide to take those vacation days, which were pre-approved, there is the opportunity that you're not going to get that payback. And no. I mean, we haven't had any major, budget crises within the federal government where we've gone without pay for a long period of time. But I mean, there's always that chance that could happen. And I still have to report to work. I still have to find a way to pay the mortgage.
Right.
I still have to figure out how to pay for gas and everything. And you know, with a stopgap budget in place, I don't exactly feel that it's fair that you're not paid. But when you were unable to even pass a stopgap budget, I don't see the problem with not paying legislation.
So, Dave, I have a question. So in that situation where it seems like there is a burden on a lot of the workers who are doing their job, and it's something that the federal government has an impasse, if, basically those legislators or, you know, whoever is making those decisions, if they're being held hostage to then actually make worse decisions, is that the way would that work better?
I don't like the idea of them being held hostage.
But when you deny a person whose only source of income is from that pay until they make a decision, are you not putting pressure on them to make a decision that they would not make, that maybe goes against the interest of the constituency, which is why they were holding out in the first place?
Yeah, you do run the risk of that. Then again, you know, as a legislator, you are a servant to the people. So, I mean, you don't necessarily go into the job, you know, for yourselves. You go
right
in there.
No, Dave, you're absolutely right. And again, let me point out something you may have not heard on the very beginning of the show. I voluntarily didn't accept my pay for over a year until we got the budget in place. I said I wouldn't do that. And so 13 months I went without it. But here's the thing, Dave, I can afford to do that. And I can still stand up for my constituents. But
I can't afford it when the federal government shuts down and I don't get my thing.
Right, exactly. You know, but you know what? Here's the thing, right? And this is another point that you brought up, which is good. In the federal government, when we have a shutdown, employees don't get paid. That puts an enormous amount of pressure, because then what we do have is actually a shutdown. And that puts an enormous amount of pressure on people to find solutions. When we came to our budget impasse in Illinois, the governor decided to pay our employees. And we said, well, but you can't do that. And he said, oh, I'm going to pay them anyway. And so the pressure was relieved. We thought that there would be no funding of education, which would put pressure on the sides to come together. The governor said, well, I'm going to veto the whole budget except for education. Let the schools open on time so I don't have to wear that jacket. So he's put in this situation. And like I said, there is a fundamental difference of agreement on the way forward in Illinois. And here's the thing, Dave, is that you're putting pressure on people that is a corruption of the process. What we're trying to do, if we want the best democracy possible, you want to remove those outside influences. There is a colleague of mine who actually loaned himself money from his campaign fund so he could pay his mortgage. Do you think that's a good idea? Can you imagine driving legislators into the arms of lobbyists saying, hey, can you write me a check because I got to pay my bills?
That was exactly the point I was going to make. I wrote down lobbyists. Well, how is
let me ask you terrible. Guys, let me ask you guys this. What is – so we're all – like the average person is sitting out here going, well, that makes sense like to not pay them because they're not doing their job because there's an impasse. But now we've got this – now you're being forced to make a decision like the point that you're making. What is – to us who aren't in that room, what is the – legal and proper and what you're suggesting way to defeat this stalemate? Like what is the actual, how does that compromise that comes from democracy happen at this point because it's so gridlocked?
Where do we get to the answer? How do we get past this budget?
Yeah. So like the move by this comptroller, that's obviously not the way to go because it's influencing decisions. But so take that out of the mix. So you're telling me that's not the way to make this better. Great. Okay, I don't disagree with you. What is the way? What can we do? What should you guys be doing? What should be happening?
Keep having the conversation.
To make a compromise out of a horns locked situation.
So, and there are many pieces of legislation where the government has locked over the years. Never as profound as a budget, which of course, because we've got such financial troubles. My suggestion is this: in a democracy, You have an idea, you put that idea forth for a vote. If you fail on that vote, the next course in democracy is elections. So if you want to end the deadlock, if you're a citizen wants to end the deadlock, go to the polls on November and make the right choice. But whatever choice that is, make that choice.
But we're just supposed to take, well, this group doesn't work, so we'll all just wait without a budget and without these things that are going to, like, you know, CPS and all these things getting underfunded. We just have to wait until we get less stubborn legislators?
Well, boy, that sounds good. Thanks. Well, this is backing me into a corner there.
Well, I'm just playing devil's advocate. It seems like I agree with you.
Yeah. Dave, what'd you say?
Well, I said he just made a very good point with that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, Dave, I know that you've been hanging in there. I want to give you a pizza. When's your birthday, Dave?
What's that?
When's your birthday?
October 2nd.
All right, I'm sending you an early birthday present on my birthday. Oh. Craig, get him a Lou Malnati's $25 gift card.
Ooh, Lou Malnati's has crustless pizza.
Wait, what?
Crustless pizza, as Brandon and I both know because we're low carbers. They make a pizza where if there's no crust. They take the sausage patty and they put it at the bottom of the pan.
No.
Yes.
Craig,
tomato sauce and cheese.
That's your jam right there.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, man. Lou Malnati's is the best Chicago pizza. So.
Well, there you go, Dave, for holding on so long.
Well, at least we can all agree on something.
And being part of the conversation. Craig will take your information and get you a Lou Malnati's gift card in just a moment. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I know Dave every time Dave talked about it, I didn't want to make him feel like he was just hanging on. Like,
no, I know. No, Dave.
No, it's
– Patty, it's a great – like I said, this makes sense. Like, fine, you're not doing your job, but our job – is to our first job is to go and represent the interest of our constituents. It's not to cave in on those interests because of financial pressures. Now, again, I'm not going to be because I have the luxury not to. But there are a lot of people who have been put in very bad situations. Loaning money from your campaign fund, what could be worse than that? And the crazy thing is that you've got two people who very well may be two of the wealthiest people in the state, Governor Rauner and Comptroller Munger, and they're like, oh, you can just work for free. No, you guys can work for free because you can afford to. But there's a lot of legislators that are poor, middle-class, working-class people, and it's the wrong way to find the answers to our problems. Because it may give us answers, but it probably will give us the wrong ones.
Yes. Well, Dave's point, too, is like when he made the federal comparison. But no one federal employee was twisting the arm and holding people hostage, like you said. You know, this is, I think this is a different situation because it's technically not a legal thing to do, but no one's going to take it on, if I understand correctly, because it's such a PR issue.
Right. I mean, I've sort of taken it on. I've been the mouthpiece for this. And, you know, I've had the governor has unleashed his PR machine on me. And, you know, it is what it is, but I'm going to stand up for what's right. The best reforms in a democracy is better democracy, not worse democracy, not less democracy. Mm-hmm. That, you know what less democracy is? It's dictatorship, at least on the path to
right.
it. And I mean, and everyone thinks, oh, you could never have it here. Hello, Trump, Rauner, wealthy guys buying elections. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We need to make sure that we as a people have voice. And I'm sorry, but if poor and middle class people can't serve in the legislature, then the poor and middle class people of our society don't have a say in the decision making process.
Well, I want to make sure everyone has a say. So that's why I'm asking Sam and Edward to hold on the line. We're going to take a quick break here and continue our conversation. I know Sam and Edward have some thoughts and questions as well. And we are taking your calls and texts at 312-981-7200. More after this. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by the mastermind and CEO of, is it CEO of
yeah,
VAMP?
Yeah,
let's go with that. The Chief Executive Officer of VAMP, which is at MCL every Friday and Saturday night.
He could be governor.
He could be governor because he's CEO. Come on in, Wayman.
Yeah, I could not afford
seat.
Without the salary, though, probably. Summer Special is the code. Summer Special, you enter it online when you're buying your tickets, and you get $5 off for the month of August. That's what's happening.
And how much are tickets in general?
Tickets are $18 or $15 for students, and that works for everybody, just everyone. We're just giving away the fun over
well,
here.
Well, and it's such a great show. It's interactive. It's lively. And Wayne Baker Brooks has joined us in the studio as well. And I think I told you to go see him. To go see VAMP, haven't I in the past?
Go see who?
VAMP, exactly. VAMP. Maybe that was our friend Mark DiCarlo that was in studio with us. And we have musician and just all around favorite of the Pretty Late Show, Wayne Baker Brooks in studio. What do you have coming up this week?
I have a gig at Brower House in Lombard, Illinois. And it's going to be fun.
What night is it?
Friday night at 9 o'clock. We start at 9.
Excellent. So it's Friday at night at 9.
Yep. And we have two sets. So if you can't make the early one, then you can make the late one.
Excellent. Or stay for both. Come to the early, stay for two.
Yeah.
I like it. We also have Representative Robert Martwick in studio with us, and he's not getting paid, and that's okay with him. But yeah, it's not
getting paid. But although I have been working side jobs. My band did gig at the Jeff Fest in Jefferson Park.
I know. So. All of you are musicians, and I feel kind of badly that we didn't set something up where you could all play in studio.
Well, surprise.
I'm going to make you sing to me before midnight.
All
right. Well, maybe before 1 a.m. because.
Eastern time?
Oh, there's a guitar and a piano. We're not going to take anything out of Jason Skaggs' studio. I think he would hurt us. And I wouldn't. we'll have to think about it. Well, we have some listeners on the line who had questions and comments about the comptroller's decision to not pay our legislators until they pass a budget. Edward wanted to say something. Hi, Edward. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for letting me on your show.
Oh, I'm not letting you. We're inviting you. You were invited. So we're glad that you took us up on that invitation.
Thank you very much. My comment is, Mr. Markwick says that individuals who are legislators who are not paid will be forced to vote against their constituents' wishes.
Right.
Could it also be that they do not want to be forced to vote against their constituents' wishes because then they will not be reelected, and they'll lose a lucrative job? Could it be more self-interest rather than nobility that's driving them? I think that is a factor.
Well, Edward, isn't it really a matter of semantics? I mean, when you think about it, your job as a representative is to represent the wishes of your district. To some extent, right? Yes, of course, you are supposed to lead, but to some extent. So in my district on the northwest side of the city of Chicago, I represent
the Rootin' Tootin' 19th.
Rootin' Tootin' 19th. Maybe it should be the Rockin' Rollin' 19th after
got
my
it.
Gig.
There
you know?
We go. Rockin' Rollin'. I like it.
No, but I come from an area that is a very strong Democratic area, and it's also a lot of working class, labor-oriented people that have strong feelings about unions. I won that election, right? So isn't it my job then to stand up and represent their interests? The governor is saying to me that I should gut all the unions. Well, I disagree with them personally, and my district disagrees with them. Why should Now, thankfully, I'm not in that position. But if this was my only job, that he would be putting pressure on me to go against the interests of my constituency. Is that self-interest? Yeah, but it's also the interest of my district, and that's my job, is to represent them.
Sorry, I had it rolled down for a second just so you could finish your answer.
Sorry, yeah, I tend to do that.
No, you're fine. I just wanted to make sure.
Fired up.
Does that make sense, Edward?
Do you get where I'm coming from, Edward?
I understand where he's coming from. I think that's a cop out. I think he's saying that just because he doesn't want to be forced to make a choice, a hard choice, about.
I'm making the choice. Edward, I'm making the choice.
Okay, Representative.
Months, that's what they've been doing. Edward, they hold off because they don't want to look bad, they don't want to make hard decisions that make people angry at them. And I think that is a lack of guts.
Edward, I'm turning
noble about.
I'm going to turn off your mic and I'll leave your mic on, but I'm turning off Representative Martwick's mic. You know that representatives did pass a budget.
Right. Yeah.
Half
a year budget.
No. Last year in 2015, they passed a budget. Your mic is off, Representative. No, but so you're saying they make a decision. They did make a decision.
Yes, that was 18 months ago.
Right, and then they made another decision this year as well.
Right, for only half a budget.
No. They also made another decision this year with another budget. Go ahead, Representative.
The stopgap that we passed took care of all of 15 and half of 16. So it was an 18-month
budget. So what decision are you looking for? Because they've made their decisions twice.
I'm looking for a full-term budget from 2016 to 2017 for everything. That's what they're supposed to do.
Right. I agree with you. I wish we were down there working on it right now. But in order to pass a balanced budget, Edward, we need to address a shortfall in revenues. We need to make cuts. But
you're not addressing that.
Well, sir. I'm ready to address it. I've got plans to do it. I'm stood up and argued on behalf of increases in revenue, tax increases specifically, and for courage. I mean, I'm the guy standing here saying legislators should get paid. I think that's pretty courageous because this is an issue that fires people up. So I'm not afraid to stand up for the things that I think are important. It's just that doesn't always necessarily bring us to an agreement. There's the other side, which is siding with the governor, that's saying that unless we gut the unions, unless I gut the things that people in my district care about, they won't even talk about the budget. They won't even talk about the revenues necessary to balance the budget. So how do I get my job done?
I wanted to find out what Sam, we have one last call, but Rick, if you want to hold on, we will take you after the news, but I want to make sure Sam gets in here. Sam's been holding on for a while. Sam, what do you want to say?
Representative Martwick, do the Democrats have a veto-proof majority in both the Senate and the House?
Technically,
do they
Sam,
have a veto-proof majority if you vote in a block in the Senate and the House?
So the
answer is the answer.
No,
right?
Sam, the answer is a little bit. Well, if you want a simple answer, if you want to actually know how it actually works, I can tell you that. So it's up to you. I mean, if you just want to just spout out a statistic, yes, technically we have that. But since you obviously understand this, you also know that we had a number of representatives who would – there was one who specifically sided with the governor who's now lost his primary. But there are also two other representatives who are Democrats. Because we – having a supermajority, we have a very large tent. There are certain Democrats from conservative areas that will not vote for tax increases. So there were three votes that voted against any tax increase we tried to propose without 71. And we only have – we have 71 members, you need exactly 71 votes. So if all of the Democrats don't stick together, and in this instance, you have three of them that would not vote for it, we can't override the veto. That's what you've got. So it's, technically we have it, but not actually.
You're listening Pretty Late, and that's Wayne Baker Brooks with Changeling. He has an event coming up this Friday night. Where can we find out information about that event, sir?
You can go to my website, waynebakerbrooks.com, or go to Brower House.
Brower House.
Yep, .com.
And that's going to be, there are two shows. You can catch one or the other. We're come for both sets, I'm saying.
Yeah.
You never know what you might miss. We have been talking to Representative Robert Martwick about the decision of the Comptroller of Illinois to not pay our legislators in order to get a budget passed. Even though the House of Representatives and the Senate both passed a budget, they agreed on a budget, the governor of Illinois vetoed it, and that's where we've been until there was a short-term budget passed, and that apparently was still not good enough for Comptroller Munger. And there are legislators, including Jaime Andrade, who has not been, we've only had him, his voicemail on the show, actually. We've called him and left a very long message, but he relies solely on the paycheck of his from his position as a legislator.
Well, now he's driving Uber
in order to,
he's
in
driving
order to pay
Uber
his bills
to make ends meet, and I give him a lot of credit for that because he did not turn to some sort of consulting gig. He did not loan himself money from his campaign fund, things that would have created a conflict of interest. So he's staying true. He's not giving in to outside pressure. He's going to represent his district. He said, you can hold my pay forever. I'm not going to vote against my district. I give him a lot of credit for that. But I just think that this is a pressure we shouldn't be putting elected officials in. Again, let me be clear about this because I get a lot of people saying you're whining about not getting your own pay. No, I'm not. I didn't accept my pay for 13 months. But I still think it's wrong when we take – this is a diverse state. We've got people who come from all sorts of economic backgrounds who serve in the legislature, and it's wrong to put pressure on them. It's just the wrong way to go about it. You're not going to get good results. The best reform in a democracy is better democracy, not less.
Well, there are people who think they're – we've talked about Governor Rauner. We've talked about the legislators. There's a name that many people think is actually the man who's most responsible for where we are right now. Rick has a question about someone in particular. What do you think, Rick?
Well, he keeps saying, you know, go vote. And I live in Chicago, and I can't remember exactly who my representative is. But Mike Madigan, as long as I've lived in Illinois, this guy has driven this state into the ground. And I don't understand how his district, that I'm sure he pays off everybody in his district to vote him back in, but he's not representing me, and he's not representing Illinois. He's representing himself. And I don't know the statistics. I wish I did. I wish I could sit down and look it all up. But it seems like there's more lawyers and more lobbyists that don't need the money, that they're getting money from kickbacks and from other situations, and they're just in it to pad themselves, regardless of whether they're getting paid from the state or not.
And I think Rick reflects a lot of people in the state of Illinois who've become cynical, who think that, I mean, really, that I think that becomes the narrative of politics in Chicago, in Illinois, that it's people for their own self-interest. But Rick, I think the first thing you said kind of fell on us a little hard. What neighborhood do you live in?
I live in Logan Square, and I can't remember who my representative is. But again, nothing gets done in Illinois because nobody has the morals to stand up against Mike Madigan and tell him he's doing a lousy job.
But Rick,
if he was working for a real company, he would have been fired a long time ago for doing this bad of a job.
I think Brandon wants to help you out here. One second, Brandon.
No, I mean, we all look at government and it's like super frustrating all the time. And it's easy to be frustrated by something you don't see the inner workings of. But even if you do, obviously, I agree, stuff's not going well. My question is, our one ability, our one thing we can do as citizens to change it is vote. So when you're saying, I'm not actually quite aware who my district representative is, that's our weapon. You know what I mean? I don't disagree at all, dude. I completely agree with you. This is not going well. So we can get on radio and on Facebook and everything and say stuff, but we've got to band together and vote. This is someone coming from someone who's registered in Denton, Texas. But you know what, man? I vote. I vote there. And I get frustrated, too. But I think you actually said it a minute ago. That's what it's so limited. So many people are out of touch with that. Before I started doing this radio show, I absolutely was the same way. I've had the pleasure and the privilege to meet so many people in our state government, and education is the key. So if we get out and we educate ourselves about who's running and what they're doing and what they're standing for, and will they represent us in a way like you're doing? You're standing up and you're saying well, no, I'm not going to compromise because that's not necessarily going to get me voted in or going to get me more money, but it's the right thing to do. And I was voted to into this position to do the right thing. And so that's the kind of people that I think we need to go into November really strong. So let's you and I do the research. Let's figure out who we can vote in to get past this, because it's clearly a personnel issue. And that's the whole point, isn't it?
Is this Rep. Gazzardi?
It is so. Rick,
you have an excellent representative.
Yeah,
I mean, depending on your politics, so. But I've watched him.
And he's a new guy, and when he ran against Mike Madigan, right? So he said, "I'm going to stand up to Mike Madigan. I'm going to represent the interests of my constituents. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to do what I believe is the right thing to do," and I think he's done that. And so Rick, you know, like I said, Rick, do you know the old saying about P.T. Barnum?
There's a sucker born every 5 minutes.
Yeah, right. And now, please don't take this as an insult, Rick. But you realize, and if you step back for yourself and you listen to yourself, you just spewed a bunch of stuff that's like, this is everything that's wrong with our state that I've read, and I'm willing to bet that you've read it probably from the Illinois Policy Institute. Which
no, this is not what I've read. This is what I've lived. That I've lived here for 48 years of my life. The unions and for all the pensions. They should have stood up then and said, no, we can't do this because it's for the people. But no, they put all that money in their pockets and said, oh, well, we're sorry. We don't know what happened. It's not our fault.
Well,
he's been there for 30-some years.
Rick, we could go round and round on this. I actually have a better idea. Can you hold on the line, Rick, because Craig's going to take your information. I'm going to go with you. You and I are going to go to Will Gazzardi's office and have a conversation, and we can do a one-on-one because this is great for everybody. By the way, email me. I will go with you to your representatives and your senator's office, and we'll have a conversation because I think that Representative Gazzardi has some great thoughts and perspective on this. Does that sound like a good idea, Rick?
I guess I don't understand why we're all a bunch of lemmings and we all sit back and allow
that's
this
my
guy
point.
To run roughshod over us.
This is my point, Rick, is that this is how to not be a lemming, is to go into your representative's office and find out how the sausage is made. Go to the source.
I remember a young comedian and radio personality coming into my office and
sitting down at a meeting about a school that provides services for special needs students.
That's right.
And it was an excellent meeting, and we have you go from there. So Rick, hold on the line. Craig is going to take your information, and we will email each other, and I will go into Representative Gazzardi's office with you and have a conversation.
And I'll
leave you there. I'm not going to sit there. It's
no,
not like
and that's great. And here's the thing, Patty. You know, you get this sense of it's that government that's doing it. It's not that government.
Right.
It's our government.
It's not passive.
This is a democracy.
This is
and it is what you make of it. Get involved. Know your representatives. Call them. Tell them what matters to you. Vote.
Yeah.
Contribute to candidates you think are going to make a difference. Knock on doors for them. That's how you participate in this government. But to sit back on your couch and say, I don't know who my representative is, but I'm pretty sure I don't like what's going on. Sorry, buddy. You've got to participate.
Start. I mean, Google it. You can just Google, how do I find my representative?
But isn't there something to be said for how disenfranchised America is in general? I mean, just growing up, you see so many stories come out. Even this year, you start to see the stuff with like what happened in Oregon with Bernie Sanders, all this kind of thing. There's so many implications, whether it is through fiction of movies and television or through the stories that we get from these 24-hour news cycles, that there is just this seeping corruption throughout the voting process. So like my power, which is to vote, which is to speak to my representative, is fairly pointless because some dude's buying it. Some Citibank or Monsanto is somehow buying every single election that really matters. Like that is what the general public, I think, is under the impression of, and why we get so angry. Well, I don't need to know my representative. It's not going to matter anyway who I vote for.
And you're making a great point, Brandon. You're getting to the gist of what I was complaining about with
I
this.
I love gists. Those are my
is
favorite.
That mm-hmm. yeah, I'm good with gists.
Good.
the biggest struggle that we have in our country today is the influence of money on the process. This mm-hmm. is our government. It's a citizen democracy. We get to control things. But lately, because of Citizens United, there has been this over-importance placed on the influence of money in politics. So people who have money have a greater say in things. And that's what this feeds into. It says, unless you're rich and you think like we do, you have no business serving, get the heck out. And I can't imagine anyone, Democrat or Republican, who thinks that's a good idea. This is not a partisan issue. This is not about punishing legislators. You want to punish a legislator? Get involved and throw them out of office.
Yeah.
The way you, the, I mean, this is about ensuring that everyone has a voice and a seat at the table so that when there are decisions made that affect poor communities and minority communities, we know that there are poor minority representatives standing up and talking about the struggles that those people deal with. This is just a bad idea. It sounds great. It feels good. Who doesn't want to punish a politician? Trust me, I only became one 3 years ago. I would have loved to have done it before that. It just doesn't make sense.
Yes, Rick.
But there is
a
place.
This is Rick Geezer, by the way.
There
Hi,
is
Rick.
A, hey, how are you guys?
He's magically appeared in a microphone.
There is a place where you can be involved, and that is on a local level. There are school boards. There are park district boards. There are library boards. There are town councils that people are fighting to for ballot spots where there are people are not running for offices and people are too worried about the Trumps and the Hillarys and the Madigans and the Rauners of the world. And they don't think about these people on the lower levels mm-hmm. that really hit you in the pocketbook. So when you're looking and voting, think about the school boards, because most of your, if you take a look at your tax bill, most of your bills go to schools.
So what do we do? What do we do to make voting easy and awesome? Because it's hard. And I feel like that's another thing. I feel like the average American thinks it's too, like they make it hard on us because they don't want us to vote,
right? Who makes it hard? We make it hard on ourselves to go.
I mean, it's 2016. I should be able to pull up an app and click, yes, I'd love, you know, Steve for school board principal, whatever.
So,
you know what I mean?
So along those lines.
Oh, interesting.
Hold on. Like a national holiday?
Okay. Hold on. Craig, we have to push Trump trackers back to after 12:30. Interesting that you should say that, because there was an effort to make it easier and possibly on the path to awesome, but something happened along the way. We'll find out. You want to know what that is.
Oh,
you know
such
you
a
do.
Teaser.
You know you want to know more after this on 720 WGN. Oh, it's so pretty late. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And joining us tonight, actually, we have Wayne Baker Brooks in the studio, who has an event coming up on Friday night at Brauhaus.
Yep, Brauhaus.
Brauhaus, which is where?
In Lombard, Illinois.
In Lombard. There are two shows on Friday night. You can go to the first. You can go to 7:30 and 9:30?
No, 9 to 10:30. No, 9 to 10 and then 10:30 to 11:30.
Excellent. And people can go to your website.
Yep, WayneBakerBrooks.com.
Go there. Get more music from him. Go see him live. And he's been very patient because we really got into this conversation.
Oh, it's okay. I try to stay out of politics.
See, and there is so much cynicism. Joining us as well is Rick Geezer, who is also one of my oldest friends, by the way. I just found out I was pregnant in 2002, in December 2002, in this guy was at my show. I was opening for Will Durst, and what was the guy's name from the Seinfeld
Orny
movie?
Adams.
Ugh. I'm sorry. Did I make that noise out loud?
You did. Everyone knows.
That was inside my head. Orny Adams said that I was never going to be successful because I was too happy.
Oh, what a stand-up comedian thing to say.
You remember my talking
I remember that.
That's inspirational. There.
He said I was never going to be a successful
challenge
comedian because I was too happy.
And he was never going to be successful because
he's
was...
an...
Yes.
All
right.
So... I'm sorry. Was that on the outside of my head as well? And Rick Geezer has been a good friend of mine, also a publicist for me, and he works for Zany's Comedy Clubs, my home club, and is very involved in politics. And I'm so glad that you stayed and hung out with us.
Thank you for having me.
And before the break, Brandon C. Price was wondering. He is the CEO of Vamp, the music, comedy, and drinking show at MCL. Go to vampchicago.com for more information. But he asked why voting is an easier and more awesomer. And,
that's what I said, awesomer.
He did. And on the path to that, it's funny you should ask. What happened recently, Representative Martwick?
Well, in the last legislative session, lest people think that we actually do nothing, we actually do a lot of really good stuff. One of the things that we did that was really a major victory was called automatic voter registration. And this was an issue that was put together by both Democrats and Republicans, all the legislature, you know, so we have Democrats in the House, Republicans in the House, Democrats in the Senate, Republicans in the Senate, and the legal staffs from all four of those staffs worked together to craft this bill that passed with great bipartisan support that said, look, we're going to make it easier for you so you don't show up at the polls and say, wait, I know I moved, but I've always been a voter. Ah, you didn't go and register. You can't vote. No, it says that your registration is going to follow you. We're going to use all of the electronic data that we currently have. You register. You get a driver's license. You move. All of this stuff goes into computers. Let's coordinate it all and make sure that it goes back and everyone gets registered to vote. If you want to opt out, you say, I don't want to be registered, you have that ability. But this was a good thing. But
what happened?
But
a good thing, surely. That should be.
Yeah, and I mean, it passed with overwhelming bipartisan majorities.
Angry.
Yes. So this week, the governor decided to veto that bill.
Why does the executive branch in Illinois have so much power? Is that across the United States?
Veto is part of democracy, and that's fine. We have the opportunity to try and override him. But I think that the fascinating thing here is that there were 7 points that the governor said, I have problems with. And the people who supported this bill sat down and negotiated with him and said, we'll give you 5 of those points. And there were 2 left that they wouldn't agree on. And he said, well, then I'm going to veto it. And he talked all about vote fraud and the integrity of the process, but that's nonsense. The instances of vote fraud are so infinitesimally small as to be irrelevant. Okay, irrelevant. He brought up 3 cases over the course of the last
like
10
electronic
years.
Voter fraud, like hacking, or
no. This is like somebody voting when they didn't really shouldn't have been able to vote. And we're talking about 3 votes cast over 10 years. But here's the kicker.
Oh, I love kickers. Almost as much.
They're almost as bad as jizz.
The point, one of the points that the people were not, the people in support of this bill were not willing to concede on, the governor would not, he vetoed it because of this, is he wanted the effective date pushed so the bill would go into effect January 1st, 2018. He wanted the effective date pushed back to January 1st, 2019.
Ooh, and why would that be?
Well, I don't know. There's an election in 2018. Who do you think's up for re-election?
Right. So
how is that like? It's things like that that, okay, we all saw that. That happened in public. You just told thousands and thousands and thousands of people that happened.
That's exactly what happened.
So I just have to sit around and wait till 2018 to vote this guy out and just assume he's just going to keep screwing everyone. You know what I mean? Like, well, what else can I do?
You know, here's the thing. When he ran on this idea that he was the outsider that was not going to play politics, was going to come in and tell it like it is. He was going to shake up Springfield. He was going to reset the state. And yet, could you think of a more political thing to do when the members of your own party, the legal staffs, the top minds said, this is good legislation. He vetoes it because he's afraid it's going to affect his election.
Here's the thing, too, and I've lived in Illinois my entire life. I've never lived anywhere but the state of Illinois. So I've watched voting since I was 18 years old. I've gone and I get excited. I make my husband dress as a precinct captain. It's creepy. But he's got a clipboard. He goes,
gold chain, pinky ring.
Now tell me which line to get.
Leather trench coat. Yeah.
Look who's blushing.
I love to vote. Every time I go, I think that this would have been a move in the direction of modernizing voting in the state of Illinois. But instead, when you go, they open this huge book with all the name. That didn't I? When I asked the... Yeah, thank you very much. I go through and they show my dad's name is still in the book. I'm like, he passed away. Every time my father, I could still vote. I could actually say I'm him and vote for my dad. And it's so antiquated. It's unbelievable. And this would have been a step in the direction
this
of modernizing.
Modernizing, efficiency. All sides agreed that this would save money in the election process because people wouldn't be forced. We wouldn't have to deal with a same-day voter registration because people's registrations would follow them. Same-day registration is all about people whose registrations didn't follow them, giving them an opportunity to vote. So this would have saved money. So the guy who's like the business outsider is looking for efficiencies. Apparently, those efficiencies weren't as important as that policy possibly affecting his election.
And by the way, for people who are worried about hacking, all your information is out there. Really, the voting is the thing that's going to hold you up?
Yeah, you play Pokemon Go, dude. They can find you.
I just caught a drowsy button.
Yes. I'm going to the planetarium tomorrow. I hear it's nuts.
Is a drowsy still in my lap?
Not right now.
Okay, good. Because it tickles when he does that. Time now for our news. Coming up after this news, we are doing Trump trackers because this is the only day of the week that we can talk about Donald Trump. That's it. We don't. Well, we in passing we talk about it, but the crazy stuff that happens in between, this is the only time we address it.
President Donald Trump knows how to make America great.
People are driving off the road as we... Please make it stop.
It just doesn't rhyme at all.
That's the part that bothers you?
Yes.
Not that it's a George M. Cohen song.
If you're going to propaganda me, do it right.
The first entertainer to get the Congressional Medal of Honor from Franklin Roosevelt, by the way, for Over There. That's the song that they are... Yeah. Are you familiar with that song? No. All right, then. We have decided on this show we can no longer address Trump issues, comments, statements, policy considerations on a daily basis. We just can't do it because it changes every day. And by the way, the same goes for Hillary Clinton. We only talk about Donald Trump on Wednesday nights after midnight and Hillary on Thursdays. Hey, Esmeralda, I want to thank you once again for naming this segment.
Oh, no problem. I get 2 cents every time you say it.
I know. We now present Trump Trackers. And we invite our listeners to let us know what they want us to cover. And we have several pieces of audio for you for your consideration. And what has happened, it has to go from Wednesday to Wednesday. Nothing from before, nothing, no, you know, not like we've pulled things out of interviews with Barbara Walters or things that happened 30 years ago, Benghazi. And unless something new happens in the week that we are talking about, we're not going to address it. But this has happened in the last week. What's the first one, Craig?
So the first one we have is he was asked on Fox News his thoughts on the CIA.
Oh, here we go.
Do you trust intelligence?
Not so much from the people that have been doing it for our country. I mean, look what's happened over the last 10 years. Look what's happened over the years. I mean, it's been catastrophic. And in fact, I won't use some of the people that are sort of your standards, you know, just use them. Very easy to use them. But I won't use them because they've made such bad decisions. I mean, you look at Iraq, you look at the Middle East, it's a total powder keg. It's a, if we would have never touched it, it would have been a lot better. I mean, we would have been much better off, on top of which we've spent probably $4 trillion. Nobody even knows what we've spent. So, no, I have great people.
You can't wait to know.
Is one of them.
Wait, I'm sorry. What? I'm not going to use them. Look, it's been catastrophic. I don't even know what he just said. By the way, the thing about the CIA is we don't actually know what they've done or what they prevented. That's the whole point of the CIA.
That can work both ways, though, right?
What do you mean?
And to be fair, the CIA doesn't make decisions.
Yeah.
The CIA gathers intelligence so that the policymakers can make decisions. The CIA did not say, let's go into Iraq and Afghanistan. That would have been George Bush.
No.
But was he acting on CIA information that was not accurate?
Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact. Remember there was Colin Powell had a little vial of, what was it? It was a cake. It was plutonium cake, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That he said that
cake.
Cake, but not good cake.
Can I tell you one of my favorite parts of the coverage of the incursion into Iraq was when we went into one of their military installations, and I remember watching the live video and
on
there
CNN,
were
no less.
Columns and columns of broken tanks because they couldn't afford to obtain the parts to fix the tanks. And it was right at that moment that I realized they don't have weapons of mass destruction. They don't have weapons.
Right.
That's where we were at.
But that's not the CIA's fault to pull back the Trump
here.
Obviously, a lot of that was ridiculous. No one knows how much we spent. I bet some people know. but you know what I mean? Is he right in this very one instance? Was that just, we got bad intelligence, and so the government had to act on the intelligence they were given?
You know, I think that intelligence is a matter of interpretation. And, you know, clearly you can find areas where you fault the intelligence and where you laud the intelligence. Clearly, the intelligence that we got about there might be a high-value target in a house in Pakistan that wound up being Osama bin Laden, I would suggest that the years, almost decade of work gathering that intelligence proved out to be pretty good.
But let's not use those guys. Trump doesn't want to use them.
Well, he's
not going to rely on them.
He's got good people. He's got the best people.
They love him.
Yeah, he doesn't know who they are yet, but they're going to be good. They're going to be so good, very, very good. And what's the next piece of audio?
So Trump actually said this sentiment several times. This is probably the first time he said it, and this one got a lot of coverage.
One thing I see out there, just happened today in Tehran. They're burning down the Saudi embassy. You see that? Now, what that is Iran wants to take over Saudi Arabia. They always have. They want the oil, okay? They've always wanted that. They have a bunch of dishonest people. They've created ISIS. Hillary Clinton created ISIS with Obama. Created with Obama.
I don't even know if that even requires any sort of commentary.
Finally, we figured out the answer.
I'm not commenting on that.
Yeah. And
if anyone needs my interpretation of what was said on there, then I need to find another line of work.
I mean, okay, Brandon, let's just say you are the creator of Vamp.
Thank you.
Right. And if somebody got really mad at Vamp,
yeah,
then and they said, well, that was somebody else, that would be weird. Right, it would be weird to say that somebody to attribute that. I mean, the founder is somebody.
Yeah, as someone who founded it, you're right. I would actually probably say something. I'd make a video that I popped on the internet that said, actually, no, that guy didn't do that. I did it. And you can be mad at all you want, but I need credit for what I did.
Right.
So he's being wily. He's trying to smoke the guy out.
Oh, maybe. Is that what Trump's doing? He's trying to make ISIS anger them.
I never thought about that. This is all a ploy at his own expense. It's a selfless move to discover America's true enemies.
We know he's selfless.
Oh, incredibly selfless.
Might change my
vote. He is so very, very selfless.
You know, when I hear comments like that, I think to myself, there's all kinds of crazy, right? There's crazy, and then there's really crazy, and then there's like rat poop in a pistachio factory nutty, right? Like, just something's not right there.
Oh,
and
now I'm never going to be able to eat pistachios again.
It's everywhere. Just eat.
Continue.
You can't
follow the line of crazy. It's all
no,
well, but here's what they would say. They would say, no, that's in context. What we meant was by their actions and, you know, what they created worldwide and globally, it was their fault. Only ISIS actually predates President Obama.
Right.
Wow, he was working on his campaign years before he was president.
Yeah. Right, he was working undercover.
He's a wily guy.
Yeah.
You know, I had the pleasure of knowing President Obama before he ever held political office.
And did he have ISIS on speed dial?
No, but I'm not even going to go there.
Okay.
You know, what I would tell you is that throughout the history of his political career, he has never made a statement that even closely resembles anything like that. So you may disagree with him, and that's fine. Listen, that's the beauty of our country, so you all get to disagree, but what the heck?
Yeah, it's well, and here, Mayor Giuliani clearly knows what it means to...
Well, there was a time where I liked him.
I know. Hold on a second. Let's see what he has to say about all of this.
By the way, under those 8 years, before Obama came along, we didn't have any successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States. They all started
when
Clinton and Obama got into office.
What? Giuliani said this?
Yeah.
What?
You didn't hear
yesterday.
This?
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. Monday. Or Tuesday. I don't even know.
Does anyone nod along to that? Because, like, again, I feel like I do a good job of representing the uneducated public. Anyone go, yeah, he's right.
No, there was on the in the visual of that, the video of that, one person starts going like this and then stops. Yeah. like they were like, yeah, what?
The training is to clap. And then logic set in.
Yeah.
Even the diehard believers went, he just screwed up.
Right. Well, because Giuliani was the one that was ahead of trying to get in front of the Second Amendment comments that Donald Trump said, yeah, that, you know, there is a solution for, you know, Hillary Clinton appointing a Supreme Court justice who will abolish the Second Amendment. And he was like, no, they're not saying he wasn't saying to shoot her. He was saying they could vote.
Yeah.
That's not the way he said it. So, OK, fine. If you want to go in, if we're going to say it's context and put it that way, but this was how is that out of context?
Yeah, and that's not like it's Donald Trump's like MO is to speak out of context and technically be speaking about something else. Giuliani, it really isn't his thing.
No.
God, that guy, he could have retired a hero, bro. Like, what are you doing?
it was very odd. And how you doing, Wayne?
I'm good. I'm just listening. You know, just I stay out of politics. You know, politics and whiskey don't.
Don't.
there's no whiskey here.
No, there's not going to be any whiskey here soon. We're talking music when we come back because we've done our Trump trackers.
Let's talk music.
All right, then.
Let's get down to some really important stuff.
I know.
It's the universal language.
So many things. More after this on 720 WGN. I have in studio with me, actually, Rick Geezer. You and I might be. Are you a musician? Do you play any instruments?
I don't.
Me neither.
My son plays guitar.
So does mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen
and
the
very
pictures.
Well.
Yeah.
And shockingly so.
My son is very good.
Who's his favorite musician and songwriters, would you say?
He goes back to the 90s. He's into Nirvana.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Power
and he likes Green Day.
That's not, Nirvana is not a bad thing. That is
no,
a
it's
good
not.
Thing. That is.
Griffin's all about.
His last, because he's performed a few shows and they've played a number of Nirvana covers. Well, actually, the one song is a Lead Belly cover.
Yeah.
And they're getting ready for another show coming up in September.
So you and I have children who are musicians, and
yes.
My son actually is a big Beatles, but now says that Paul Simon is the greatest singer-songwriter of his time.
Wow.
Of not Paul Simon's time, of Griffin's lifetime.
Wow.
Which I love. And I'm trying to expand his taste a little bit.
Paul Simon's a good choice.
We went to go see him at Ravinia.
Greatest singer-songwriter.
Griffin stood for 3 hours at the railing to watch Paul Simon at Ravinia because we had lawn seats, and he stood for three
Turn
hours.
Turn him on to Tom Waits.
Or like Ooh. Dylan, you know what I mean?
That'll be next. I know because Griffin's
Doc
also...
Doc Watson, if he likes the guitar aspect
Doc
of it.
Watson,
Doc's
yeah.
the man.
So that's the thing, is right now in studio I have with me three guitarists. And so I have to ask around the studio, Representative Martwick, who are some of your influences? Who spoke to you as a child?
Well, as a child was different. I mean, like you said, when you're growing up and you're just kind of, you know what gets pushed into your face. So, all right. I hate to say this, but as a child, it was what I heard on the radio.
Sure.
I grew up in the 70s, so it was a lot of stadium rock. You know?
Oh, sure.
It was Journey, and it was Kansas, and it was, Styx, and it was REO Speedwagon, and you know. But as I developed, you know, as a child, that was what hit me. But as I developed, I became a big fan of Bob Dylan. I mean, mm-hmm. I just... I tell people all the time, if you know a great song out there and you can't figure out who wrote it, chances are it was probably Dylan, you know. Mm-hmm. So.
And you, Brendan?
I mean, like, I got to double down on the Dylan thing. And even if he didn't write it, he brought back songs from the... It's kind of like Zeppelin in the way that they brought back songs that we as a public would have never heard again and breathed new life into them. That was before... It mattered who wrote it. You know what I mean? Songs were songs, and they were pieces of art, and different artists could perform them, and it was okay. Now, if you sample my riff, I'm going to sue the crap out of you. I love Dylan. I love a lot of bluegrass and folk. Doc Watson is just one of the greatest guitar players. You listen to Doc Watson, you think three guitars are playing, mm-hmm. and it is just one blind dude, and he is just ruling on it. I love Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. I love bluegrass, a lot of banjo.
Ralph Stanley?
Bela Fleck, like taking Bela different, Fleck, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Just breathing new life into that instrument too. I listen to a lot of that. And then guitar wise, I like early Beatles, studio Beatles. It's kind of pointless to play on an acoustic guitar. But yeah, I'm just, and then again, anybody from the AC/DC, Zeppelin, like, oh, my dad was listening to this, so I'm going to listen to it era. I don't play a lot of power chords, but I do love the music.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I was very excited that I have that button.
Is this Shoot to Thrill?
You shook me all night long.
Oh, see, man, only that band could make 10 albums of the same song and it'd all be good.
And then came the Ramones.
Yeah. Now, the musician in the studio is Wayne Baker Brooks. I mean, you guys play guitar and you like music.
Right.
Yeah,
I play guitar, but I play the radio better, man. You know, I just turn it up to 11, you know.
You grew up around music and are an amazing singer, songwriter, and guitar player. What else do you play?
The drums. I mess around with the drums. When I was like 6 years old, I used to help my dad write songs using pots and pans and boxes with spoons and knives.
He had to have been so proud, too.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
That's maybe the coolest thing ever.
Well,
seriously. No. Can I tell a story? Just a quick story. 1997, I happened to be walking past the Cubby Bear, and I walked in the Cubby Bear, and I watched oh my God, I'm having a brain fart. Johnny Cash. I watched Johnny Cash in the Cubby Bear.
What?
When he was coming out of his drug-induced haze, right?
What?
And I always thought that was the coolest thing that I could say. I walked into the Cubby Bear and saw Johnny Cash for $20 in June, and the family was with him.
Wow.
He was just coming back after, you know, this decade-long affliction. But that's the coolest thing I ever heard, that you, with pots and pans, you helped your dad write songs when you were 6 years old. The of course, the legendary Lonnie Brooks. That is so cool, Wayne.
I was about to say, songs we've probably heard.
Yeah, a lot of those songs ended up on Alligator Records. One of his first album on Alligator.
People used to tell me they were jealous of my story. I'm officially jealous.
I mean, and with your dad, you know, what kind of music did he play? I mean, because if he's creating music all the time, what was his jam?
Oh, man, I used to listen to a lot of his music when I was little.
Uh-huh.
And he would listen to, like, Chuck Berry and Albert King and Bobby Bland and B.B. King, one of his favorites.
Sure.
Muddy Waters. He loved John Lee Hooker.
Oh,
John Lee Hooker. He loved, and Lightnin' Hopkins. Oh my God, when he was a kid, the ice cream truck would play Lightnin' Hopkins.
Really?
Yeah, ice cream truck.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, back in the 30s and 40s.
Wow.
Yeah, he was born in the Depression.
And where was he born? Was he here in Chicago?
In Louisiana.
In Louisiana?
Yeah, Dubuisson.
And when did he come here?
1959.
Okay.
He came here with Sam Cooke.
Oh man.
No.
Yeah, him and Sam Cooke. Yeah, him and Sam Cooke became buddies because my dad had a couple of hit records back in the '50s.
Mm-hmm.
So he would like tour with, you know, he had James Brown opening up for him back in the day.
Sure, why not?
And you know
that
and,
kid.
Yeah, he was young then. Yeah. My dad was, you know, had hit records and he was out on the road, and then he toured with Sam Cooke, and they became friends on the last day of the tour. So my dad was watching his set after he got done,
mm-hmm.
and it was the last song, and he left. He was like, you know, I better leave before the crowd get crazy and everything. So he jumped in the cab behind the stage, and literally like 5 minutes later, this man just like jumped into the cab and was like, step on it. And it was Sam Cooke. And then he's like, where you going? He's like, well, I'm going to the Washington Hotel. And he was like, me too, step on it. And it was literally 200 women chasing
what?
Sam Cooke to the car. And he had to go. He was like, let's go. So they ended up becoming friends. And my dad left the tour. And he was like, man, you know, I love blues. You know, I play rock and roll, but I want to play blues.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, man, well, you got to come to Chicago because that's where Muddy Waters is. That's where Harlan Wolf is. And he said, you can stay with me as long as you want. And he stayed with Sam, his mom, his dad, his brothers, and his sisters for like 9 months. And then met my mom.
Oh.
And then the rest is history. So I wouldn't be alive without Sam Cooke, man.
Jumping in that car with women chasing him down the
street. Chasing him like,
there's a lot of us that wouldn't have been born.
I know that. But literally for me, literally.
Yeah, that's valid.
Yeah, literally. Like if they wouldn't become friends, you know, who knows?
That's a great story.
This show always dictates what I'm going to listen to on the drive home. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, change gonna come.
No doubt, man. No doubt. Yep.
What for you when you're creating music? What does that do? You set aside time, or is it kind of as it comes to you?
I like it when it comes to me.
Yeah.
You know, I dream songs.
Oh, see, hold on. We got to talk about this after the news.
And you can remember it.
I can read your mind.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. That's Wayne Baker Brooks with I Can Read Your Mind. And he says that he can read his own mind. Because I have asked many musical guests if they remember their dreams, if they dream in music, and they have all said no. They've thought of things that have occurred to them. They roll over. They try to journal it. But it's never musical. And you've told me that you do dream in music.
Two songs. One time I remember in my dream of the music in the background, and I'm writing at the desk
mm-hmm.
as the words are coming out
me singing it. Right. And in the middle of me writing, I go, man, you better remember this, man. You better. This could be the song, you know.
So you took control.
So, yes, absolutely. And remembered it, looked at it like three times in my dream. And woke myself up and wrote it down real quick.
Was that because you'd had other dreams where it went away? It just faded? It dissolved?
No.
This was the first time you knew it was that important?
Yeah. Oh. Yes, yep. Twice that happened.
So was that your advice to Brandon, was to take control in the dream?
Yeah.
That's how you remember?
Yep.
So before you go to bed, tell yourself, Brandon, remember whatever it is.
I have enough problems, like, with my own memory of actual things that happened. I can't. I would rather just not dream. It's either a tease or a terrible fear.
Well, you do dream, whether or not you remember them.
I love dreams, man.
It's too much. It's too much. Like, I struggle with anxiety over my own memories all the time, good or bad. I don't need, like, made-up stuff to go into that pile of things to sort through.
It's not made-up stuff. It's the things,
and see, that's a rabbit hole my mind can go down, and then I've got a life to live. I've got things to do here in the real world. I can't spend all that time.
But it might be a portal to your inner, you know, the things that inspire you, the things that speak to you. Maybe you're shutting them off.
Well,
including music.
I'll live at the risk.
All right. And you said there was another song that you had a similar experience.
Same thing. The music would be like in the background while I'm writing, and I always tell myself, you better remember this. And I would always have like a notepad near my bed and just write it down real quick.
So your dream self knows, like,
yes,
this is a thing that's happening to us. We
and
have
it's
to remember
rare.
This.
Yes.
Wow.
And I associate it with like a gift from God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I associate it with. Like, this is him giving me
a direct message.
A direct message.
Yeah.
You know.
And I don't think that sounds... To be honest, Brandon, I don't think that sounds too crazy.
I don't think it's crazy. I just think it's a lot.
A lot.
It's too much pressure. It is a lot. But, you know, I think about it like, Wayne, obviously, you know, your passion is music. I mean, I've written a few songs, but I've heard two of Wayne's and I'm like thinking immediately, I'm not worthy. But
and you're not. No, I'm kidding.
I'm not. Although I'm kind of hoping.
None of us are, to be honest.
I'm hoping maybe I can sharpen that up, because after today's show, I might need another line of work other than politics. But.
Yeah, you write music and I'll run for president.
There you go.
That?
I like that. And I'll run your campaign.
All right.
But you know, I've had a lot of inspiration in my dreams related to the things that I do in politics. Ideas come to me. I wake up in the morning and I'm like, there's something I can do. So, you know, that's what your focus is. And so I'm not surprised that you know, when you go to sleep, that things come to you. I mean, that's,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, do you dream? Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, most of my dreams are, you know, me performing, you know, or writing or other things.
Also inspirational.
When you're performing, is there ever a dream where you're performing and you don't have any pants on? Just curious.
Well, performing what?
Exactly. It's all subjective. Well, No. So, Representative Martwood, do you ever dream of being like on the floor of the representatives and saying, like, giving a speech or arguing something? Do you ever have those, like?
I do, you know, often. I think it's, again, probably the stress of what we deal with. I mean, in the last week, since I decided to take on this issue, I've had a lot of people confront me about it. And
you go to sleep thinking about it.
I go to sleep thinking about it, and I dream about arguing about this on the floor of the floor of the House of Representatives, about whether or not this is a good policy or not. And, you know, it's amazing how at times, and I think a lot of it is the stress, because people are personally angry at me, and I'm like, look, remember, I didn't take my own pay for over a year. I'm with you on this. I just think it's a bad policy, but I take it personally. You know, people attack me personally, I take it personally. So I dream about it. And they're not good dreams. I mean, your dream, Wayne, you're dreaming good dreams. You're dreaming music. I wish I could dream about songs. I'm dreaming about people yelling at me.
Oh, man, I have a reoccurring dream that it's a Giordano's pizza.
Ooh.
Coming straight to my mouth.
And the cheese is like... Oh,
and it's like slowly. And then I wake up.
Oh, God. Rick Geezer, also in the studio. What do you dream about? What are your dreams like?
I dream. I fly.
God, you guys have sweet dreams.
I dream about flying. I love that dream.
That's the best.
What do I gotta Am I a negative person?
Nah, I'm just. I dream my soaring.
I dream of my teeth falling out.
Okay, so you get it. Okay. Yeah. So I don't have positive dreams.
Yeah, I know. Esmeralda, how about your dreams?
I had a dream where my teeth, they got knocked out. I was in an Uber, and I somehow, I remember I was talking, and then I'm somehow just flying out of the Uber, and I hit a truck's
like the lug nuts
mirror.
On their tire?
Oh, man. Wait,
and I remember
with your face?
Yeah, and my teeth, I remember my teeth coming out, and I'm just like, oh, that's not good.
That's not going to turn out well. Yeah.
Is teeth coming out of your mouth, does that like mean something universally?
Yes.
Like, does it mean something to you, or does it mean something, you and Esmeralda are getting the same message from the dream world?
See, but mine got knocked out.
Mm-hmm. And mine just fall out. Like,
yours just fell
out. Like,
what is that?
And like, it just fall, like crumbling.
So is that just like a random, like, oh, I have anxieties, I also have teeth, my dreams have put these two together, or is there like a message?
She just got to quit eating bricks.
Yes. That's what.
There is a
life
theory.
Is giving me a sign.
There is a theory that losing your teeth is a sense that you have no power, that you don't feel like you have any control over things in your life. So because not having teeth, you don't have the ability to like bite down on anything, so you're powerless.
Yeah. And actually, for me, it did make sense.
There you go.
You both seem like powerful people.
Well, do you want to give us an example of something that you've had a recurring?
Yes, a petting zoo nightmare. In which, I was knocked over by a goat a couple of times as a kid. Well, my uncle Johnny had these goats, and I was raised on a bunch of farms. The point is, the nightmare is, it's a very small square pen, and I am running away from a lot of petting zoo animals, and my family is watching from the window of the house outside the pen, and I don't know if they're enjoying it. They are not helping.
They're cheering on the animals.
Yeah, who knows what those people are doing.
Get them!
You know, your family, like, ugh. But, yeah, that's my reoccurring... I try not to dream.
So wait, you were knocked over by a goat as a child?
I was. It was not traumatic. It just happened. That's the only reason I could think, like, maybe why I'm afraid
now
of petting
wait,
zoos.
In the dreams,
but you relive it.
Yeah.
All
in the dreams,
time.
Are that they're just chasing you, or they do they look like they're going to attack?
No, I don't think they're chasing me to say hi. I've never stopped and asked.
Maybe next time, if you
take
are
control.
Able to, yeah.
Are
yeah.
they all goats?
What song should I write, goats? I don't know.
Are there sheep or just goats?
You know what I mean? It's like when your best friend is there, like, but you don't know. They don't have a face. I don't retain it. I try not to. I'm happy that dreams are working out for other people.
Can I just say that we all, like, were able to sort of talk about our dreams, and Brian was like, mine are terrible, and then he tells us, and we mock him.
Yes, yes. Look, exactly. It's scarier than it sounds.
Like, I know. I'm saying I feel badly that we offered this sort of safe space and then jumped on and just powered
call in if you can help me with this problem.
312-981-7200. Yeah, Jill Urchak was always great at doing dreams. We need to have her back on the show. She has her own podcast.
Is there but there's a universal, like, oh, if you dream about octopi, then that means this. Like, there's like a book that says this.
Yes, there are. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not.
We can Google it. Do you want me to Google
it? I believe you.
What does an octopus mean in your dreams? What is a petting zoo? Well, because yours is based partly on a personal experience.
I don't think so. I mean, I've never been like man, that one time. I've
been
around
goats.
Involved. I've milked goats. I've have an intimate relationship with goats.
Yeah, that we didn't know that much.
But like, you know what I mean, though.
I do.
Well, maybe something happened to you, and you just don't. You're repressing.
No, I'm a very lucky human being who's had a good go in life and had a great family. Nothing bad's happened to me like that,
except for the
to warrant petting zoo attack dreams.
What was it? Did someone just zip something? Is it? I'm just like, was I imagining?
Happy birthday.
Very strange. Don't listen to me. Very strange turn. Man. Okay, I have a question for you guys, and we'll talk about this when we come back from the break. Is anyone watching the Olympics at all?
Totally.
Are you watching?
A little, yeah.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Brandon?
Gymnastics, man. Oh, and the race. Did you see the
We'll find out more for this on 720 WGN.
Triple jump.
You know you want to talk about it. Maybe because we were talking about dreams. I felt a little mellow, that's all. So we are all now looking at the picture of Ellen DeGeneres on the back of... the gold medalist. What race did he win, by the way? The 800 by 400? No. Let me see. That's not even a thing.
The 800 by running this rectangle.
That's the quality of the picture.
Was it the 100 meter?
100 meter? I have no idea. But by the way, I do love that he's just sort of smiling. And so Ellen's crew, I'm assuming that Ellen did not Photoshop herself on the back of Usain Bolt. And he's a gold medalist for the one, we don't know.
From Jamaica.
And
he's very fast.
Fastest man in the world.
No, I'm sorry, what was that, Craig?
Pretty cool.
The 100 and the 200 meters. So the fastest man in the world. Let's just say that. That works, yes?
Yeah. We agree.
All right. And she tweeted out, this is how she's going to run her errands from now on. And there was a big backlash, including a friend of the show, Dwayne Kennedy, who tweeted out about, this is another, it's smacked of racism. And I was listening to a lot of people talking about it today. And it was kind of a, oh, come on, get over it. Now we're being too politically correct. But if someone sees that picture and just, if it strikes them a certain way, I mean, they get to feel that way, don't they? I mean, they get to have that moment.
I laughed
that moment
when I saw it. I laughed.
And you should be able to feel that way.
I think when it becomes, comedy, it should be a line. You should understand that it's comedy. Now, if it was a white guy that won the race, mm-hmm. and she did the same thing,
no one would say anything.
No one would say anything.
Right. Also, yeah. Fastest man in the world.
Right.
Right. Well, and that's a good point, too, because it should just be, that should be colorblind, right?
Right.
Fastest man in the world.
Yes. I think that's what it is that she was trying to accomplish, that he's really fast and we're going to run errands. And that's just my take.
But
what was the first thing you said, though?
Before I showed you the picture, what did you say? You said driving Miss Ellen.
Oh, yeah, I did, yeah.
But that's comedy, too, right?
That's comedy, funny, too.
Yeah, right, yeah, it was like...
I'm just saying.
Yeah, exactly. You should protect comedy because it makes people laugh, and, it's part of what I do. I'm an entertainer, and I'm here on Earth to make people forget politics and politricks, what's going on in their world, that they can't stand.
Right.
So when it comes down to...
Hold on a second. These folks are running, and I think they're inspired by the Olympics, by the way, on Michigan Avenue.
They're in jeans.
I go jump on their back real quick.
I work every night. We're here every night. I've never seen a couple just running down the street. I mean, that did not look like they were just trying to get somewhere. That looked like a workout, didn't it, a little bit?
Love finds a way.
I'm just saying. Okay, so go ahead.
No, I like Ellen. I think it was a funny photo, and people just took it out of proportion.
Isn't it progressive to to do that joke regardless of the race of anybody involved in the thing? Let's take the conversation well past pointing out how we're different, mm-hmm. and then just make this joke regardless. I don't know. I'm speaking from a place of general privilege in my life, and so I could definitely be wrong. But it just seems to me like if you said the phrase, they have a right to feel that way. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Everybody has a right to feel however the heck they want about anything.
Right.
But does certain people feeling that way about it mean it shouldn't happen, or just mean that you have a right to feel however? When people do bad Southern accents, Nicolas Cage and Con Air, I get a little offended.
Oh, it's so bad.
You know what I mean? So I have a right to feel that way. But I'm not going to, does that mean we should change our actions? Does that mean we should censor satire?
Because you can't create. If you're constantly thinking, how will people respond to this?
Well, where's the line? You know what I mean? I right. agree that we should take care of and not do terribly offensive things. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think comedy has to be the line. If we don't laugh about
right.
everything
if we can't
in this
laugh,
world,
man. Jesus what,
like, just
Christ.
Sign me up for the end.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me put the list together.
Yeah. Bring it out.
Who's on the list for the end? Anybody?
I can understand where, a lot of people, get angry about that situation. But, a laugh is a laugh. It made me laugh when I first saw it because you look at her silly, smile on her face. You can't help but laugh at that. But at the same time,
And how, okay, earlier Wendy and Bill were talking about this and somebody called in and said, well, she's gay. So she wouldn't, she knows what it's like to be marginalized and
right.
harassed. And then a black woman called in and said, when I saw that picture, it was painful to me. And by the way, gay people can be racist as well. Right. So, and this again is one of those interesting moments where people who don't approve of the gay lifestyle and also don't think we should be sensitive about racial images have to go, there's a gay woman. It's okay that she did this thing.
Like, oh, any group that's ever been oppressed, ever, it's okay that they must all be on the same opinion about everything.
Right. But for me, it was a funny moment of, you know, because Bill O'Reilly had something to say about it, right? Said the people are overreacting, but now he has to come to the defense of a gay woman who is sort of this, you know, lightning rod for people to go, oh, you know, if we let, you know, homosexuals get married. It's just an interesting moment, I think.
Yeah.
To go, well, we should be able to make fun of black people because the gay woman did it.
I could just see every Republican. Well, yeah, it's okay. It could open the door.
It could open the door to that. Yeah,
right. It's just an interesting. You're like,
I could see where they're coming from, but it's still comedy.
Oh no, I agree. I just think it's interesting to make people stand that ground, right? Yeah. Of saying, no, we should be able to make fun of black people, is what I'm saying. I mean, like that is a point of view, and then they have to say because this gay woman did it.
We should just be able to make fun of people. Yeah. It shouldn't be about it. Like I get that, like, hundreds of years of absolute nonsense make it about it. I get that. But, like, isn't the next progressive step to just stop mentioning black, white, gay, or straight and just say, hey, this is a lady on top of a dude who's very fast, and that's why this is
funny. She should reverse it. She should, like, do a picture of him on top of her and right. She's running.
Well, there you go. And she probably will in the next week. But
yeah, I would put Usain on the show, probably.
I think so, too. But I'm sure. No, he retweeted her tweet, by the way. So,
and what did he say?
You know, he retweeted it. So that was his stamp of approval, okay. saying that he thought it was funny as well. But I think that you're right in that it should be, here's a woman and a man making a joke, only they make it political. People make it political when they say that gay people can't get married or that, you know, black lives, we don't want to say Black Lives Matter anymore because that just creates violence against the police department. So it's already there. It's already the political nature of what it means to be gay or black is part of the conversation, even though it's comedy.
So we can oversensitize ourselves to that, or we like, because how else do you incite change but lead by example? Right. And so I'm not going to say, oh, the woman, Patty, and the gay guy, this guy, and the black guy, Wayne. You know what I mean? I'm not going to say any of those things. I'm just going to talk about Patty and this guy and Wayne. Like, isn't that doing the right thing? Isn't
yes.
that stepping in the right direction?
It is.
But couldn't I also, therefore, in like situations like this, be called a racist or a bigot or something?
Yes.
So what am I supposed to do?
Just keep going.
Okay.
Keep showing up. Everyone
just
keeps showing up.
Just be nice. Don't be yourself. That's how I'm
about it. Wait a minute. What?
Just be nice.
That's
don't
so
be
confusing.
Yourself.
That's so confusing. Don't be yourself. What do you think, Representative Bartwick?
I think Usain Bolt is got to be one of the most amazing athletes I've ever seen in my life. So I I'm going to digress from the politics. As you can see, I've been very quiet on this subject. But when I watch that race, when you see how slow he gets out of the blocks, he is dead last when they hit that.
Really?
Yeah.
So he picks up his speed.
If it was 150-yard dash, mm-hmm. he would blow people away by 50 yards. He gets such a head of steam going, and I think to myself, how can a human being move that quickly? It's so amazing.
And
to
then
watch
one of the
run.
Preliminary races, did you see? I mean, he was setting back,
yes.
and just blew ahead. It was amazing.
It's unbelievable. And you know, like you said, it's if there's one thing that's great about the Olympics is the privilege to see really such special human beings, Michael Phelps.
Gosh,
yeah.
Right? I mean, to be that good for that long is just...
And I say he comes back.
Pot.
There you go.
But maybe it helped him.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Maybe right. It opens capillaries, lets the blood flow.
And it relaxes you, you know, calms the nerves a little bit, steadies.
I supported medical marijuana, just saying for the record.
As he... Oh, man.
Interesting point. Go ahead, yes.
I was just, like, so ESPN Top 10, that's kind of like the very short attention span sports world that everybody subscribes to now. The Olympics is that. When you see a Tiger, when you see a Michael Jordan, you know, you see somebody truly dominating their sport. That is such that's so much fun to watch, even if you absolutely hate that sport. And the Olympics, I feel like I'm not a huge fan of archery. I never really look into it. But the Olympics is the top of the top. It is the top 10 of every random sport ever. Yeah. And it is so cool to get into. It's just incredible. It's incredible to watch these athletes.
And it's incredible how every 4 years you become an expert on triple jumping.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's like, yes, I know all about dressage.
Yeah. Well, Patty, let me ask you this.
How about after the break? More after this on 720 WG. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Craig, that gives me a good idea for who we should call for our Pretty Late wake-up call. I think we're going to call Lewis Black tonight. I think that sounds like a little bit of fun. Yes? Anybody in the studio want to call Lewis Black for our...
Why not?
Yeah, I'm down. I thought you were going to say Angus Young.
I thought Brian Johnson.
I don't have their numbers. Do you have their numbers? No. All right, then. What? Do you want, if you have someone in your phone that you want us to call, we will wake someone up. Right? You probably have some good names in there, too. Lewis Black's at the top of my list. And some of the legislators in the state of Illinois, I'm sure that Representative Martwick. Actually, you have a pretty good list, too, don't you, Representative Martwick? Okay, I want you two to go through your names of who you want me to call in about 10 minutes. And Brandon C. Price had a question about the Olympics.
No, I can't remember the names, but there was a race where one of the female racers dove ahead at the very end at the finish line and then beat the American who was technically like running in first place but didn't
die. Not falling, right.
Is that, like, that enraged me, and I'm not sure if it's like, oh, no, that's, everyone can do that. They just don't choose to, or this is a technicality, and I don't know. It just seems a little underhanded.
So it was Shaunae Miller who won the 400 meter. Right. She dove across. Right. So it's like a head first slide, which I'm not a fan of in baseball either.
Well, unless you're Ricky Henderson, you can't really pull it off. You're actually
or Pete Rose. And basically he was always doing it to endanger the. Did you see that one in the All-Star game where he basically took that guy's head off?
Well, that's how baseball used to be great. It's like NASCAR. They've made it so safe now.
Yeah,
it's not fun
to watch. Him and.
He injured Ted Simmons, I believe, in the All-Star game.
Came at him like head first into his shoulder. Yeah, Ty Cobb, you know, sharpening his cleats. I'm just saying there are things. You said that it wasn't baseball.
I'm just asking. I know baseball better than I do running. So, or track, I guess, is what they probably call it.
Yeah, she dove across the finish line.
And she won, and the officiators and the announcers didn't have, Bob Costas seemed to think it was totally okay.
Well, yeah. It apparently, if your torso is across the finish line before, I agree. I don't think it seems fair. So, but those are the rules. And the question is, why doesn't everybody just dive across?
That's
the finish line?
My question. If those are the rules, then why aren't we all diving?
Well, most people don't need to do it. That was such a close race. Yeah.
But she does have a few cuts and bruises, so there's that.
Well, yeah,
I mean, she could have. Well, she could have injured herself.
All
I mean,
means necessary.
She could have amazing how herself. When you apply gold to cuts and bruises, they go away really fast.
Very soothing.
That was like Michael Phelps's cupping. You know, like all the circles all over him, and all the tweets about how he just fell asleep on all of his medals.
But you know, those medals, you get taxed on those medals.
Yeah, oh, man. I don't get that.
What? Do you really? Yeah.
There is a taxable, because you earn some money as well.
Yes, you get taxed.
So you do get taxed.
I was looking at the average income of different athletes for the Olympics from different countries. And like some countries are paying their, like, I don't know where exactly. It's outside of sponsorship and advertisement. But America is actually one of the lowest on that list. Like our people get paid, I think it's like average 60 grand-ish. And I'm not sure who's giving that money. But like Singapore is like 200,000, and it's all in U.S. currency values. So it's crazy to me to think, like, we're watching these people who are so much better than most people at this, you know what I mean? Like, just incredibly driven, hardworking people that have devoted their lives, and we're like, ah, cool, thanks for representing our country in one of the most, like, globalizingly wonderful situations ever. Here's, like, a very small salary. Good luck with the rest of your life.
Not just that, but it's also access to the state-of-the-art technology, right? So it's not just athletes who got really good at it. Then they're taking it to the next level, whether it's equipment or, you know, everything that it takes to be there on a global level. So it's supposed to be amateur sports, which kind of cracks me up. I mean, like, how many of those – I mean, running is running, right? There's so much you can do to train for
you're
that.
Faster, you're not.
Right. But then there are other things where, you know, they
like
seem to be able to enhance
players.
Well, those are professional players who are now amateur players, apparently.
I mean, in the world, like if there was a global NBA, then okay, they can't play in that. Right. I don't know. Like what's an amateur in the Olympics? That's anybody who hasn't won already, right?
Well, the contention is the rest of the countries were never amateurs.
Right. It started with the Soviet Union.
With the Soviet
they
Union.
Played there.
By the way, I think Ron has been he's been pondering this since we last talked about it a little bit ago. The photo that Ellen DeGeneres has, where she is astride the world class Olympian gold medalist Usain Bolt, and he has a thought about this. What's being missed, Ron? What do you think?
Yeah, Pat. I think what's being missed is that this image sort of conjures up
I think, notions of blacks as beasts of burden. This is an image that has been stereotypically portrayed throughout the history of America. I think that's the point that people are missing. And I think that sometimes I think that our black comedians are too easily dismissed. I think, you know, the significance of these sort of portrayals, and they sort of chalk it up in the name of comedy. So this is a point that I think that that they are missing. And I see this thing going on over and over and over, year after year, and you think that we as a country and as a people have learned more, but I think that the image is constantly being ingrained, really, in the psyches of people. And this is how people ask, how does racism occur? What is the genesis of racism and so forth? I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that these kind of stereotypical images are ingrained in people's minds very often in the name of comedy.
Here, Ron, I have to agree in that I think I said earlier that of course there are people who, like, that's a painful image to. And I would say that the fact that it's now a conversation, like 20 years ago, it would have just been funny and people wouldn't have been outraged. Mm-hmm. From the black community or the white community, it wouldn't be a conversation. I think the important part here is that it is a conversation. And yes, maybe the opinions of people, you know, saying, oh, don't take it so seriously, don't have your feelings hurt. And that you call in and say, wait a moment, this is an important this is an important image and we should take stock of that. I think that that's how far we have come and continue to move forward in that way. And I would say also that the way women are portrayed in comedy, whether it's in stand-up comedy or in movies or in television, is similar in that, you know, and we push back. And we you and I, Ron, and everybody else who finds this important, keep showing up.
Yeah, well, I think that we're kind of going in reverse, though, I think, because a lot of these issues were dealt with, you know, years ago during the movement and things like that, and you see them recurring again, and I don't think really we've learned that much. I'm going to give you one other quick example because I know you're busy, but I see this recurrence going on, for example, on CNN on some of the commercials, one that really irritates me. That's one with the comedian, I think, Leslie Jones or something, an Allstate insurance.
Yes.
And you know, she's talking to the Allstate insurance salesman, I think, and then just as a side, she says to the guy, "Want my number?" Now, to many people, that would sound like, seems like something that is very insignificant. But what one has to understand is that this stereotypical portrayal and image of black women historically has been that they were always accessible. You see what I'm saying? Or easy access, you know, by whites and that sort of thing. And they were people of easy virtue and that sort of thing. So people don't understand it. They think it's just a very simple thing, but it really conjures up the notion and ingrains in the psyches of people the idea that black women basically are easy, okay?
But wouldn't you say, Ron?
Doesn't even know the guy, and she says to him, "Want my number?" I mean, it's ridiculous. You
but
know,
wouldn't
really
it,
think about
but,
it.
But, well, the way I would think about it is, wouldn't it be a woman who's saying, "Hey, I want you. Do you want me too?" when she's offering her number.
No, but why is it that it is a – how does the man respond? Why is it that it is the black woman who initiates it and the guy doesn't even respond in an affirmative manner?
Oh, so he's
so
not –
it's the idea basically that she's essentially an inferior, that she's so – she's you know, wants to basically put herself out and make herself easily, like I said, available to this person who is really not even interested in her. And this is a portrayal that has gone on for years historically, as well as many other stereotypical portrayals of blacks in different ways. And I think, again, that people write these things off. But actually, I'm going to tell you, CNN is one of the big offenders in this regard, because I've seen over the years a number of commercials in which blacks are portrayed in similar manners.
Well, I would say, Ron, that on CNN, what they do in their sales department and what they do as far as producing the news and their other programming can be somewhat sort of separated. Do you ever watch Kamau Bell's show?
I've seen one of them, I think. Yeah.
And what are your thoughts on Kamau's show?
Well, you know, I've never really seen a full one. I think at first, I tell you what, my initial impression was that this is another similar stereotypical but I had a chance to hear him in a prolonged conversation, and I kind of changed my mind a little bit about him, but I can't really speak intelligently in detail.
I would say we kind of had this conversation earlier on the show about not knowing who your representatives are, and sort of saying this blanket statement about CNN and their violations of racial protocol. If you aren't watching a show that is spearheaded by a black comedian who is going around the country and trying to understand race voice and shedding a light on the experiences of African Americans, I would say there's a lot more research to be done. Thank you so much for joining us. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late, and we are wrapping up the show. Nick Giglio is up next. We have had so much fun. This is, I didn't call this a birthday party, but I want to thank everybody for being here for my birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Patty. Happy birthday to you.
That's really good.
I told you we worked out the harmonies earlier.
Wow, thank you very much. I got all blushy and everything. We're doing our last call right now, as a matter of fact. Hello? This is very exciting. Mark DiCarlo.
Hey, Patty Vasquez.
Hello. You will never guess who I have in the studio with me right now. Maybe you already know.
Baby Jesus?
Hold on a second.
Close.
No. Very...
adolescent Jesus.
Do you have something you can... What hints do you have for him that you could help him out with to let him know who's in the studio right now?
Let's see. I'm the only one that could really hook up some really good tickets to the Cubs.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he hates the Cubs. That's Wayne.
Wait a minute. You hate the Cubs?
No, I don't hate the Cubs. I just love my White Sox.
That's all right.
That's all right.
There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Mark, no. What's up?
Hello. Well,
my brother from another mother.
That's right.
Let me go around the horn real quick. Hey, Mark DiCarlo. This is Patty Vasquez.
Craig Collins.
Esmeralda Leon.
Rob Martwick.
Brandon C. Price.
Over here.
Rick Geezer.
And, of course, you know.
And the brother of Jesus.
Wayne Christ.
We actually had a little birthday party in my studio tonight. Is your lovely wife at home by any chance?
She's in the studio. She's actually working right now.
All right. I love Yenny. I miss you guys.
Believe it?
I know. Well, you guys are working like round the clock. I love that about you guys.
I'm just watching the Olympics.
What event are you on right now? Some guy from Jamaica with a yellow shirt? Is that what's on your television?
No, I just watched the USA women's beach volleyball team beat Brazil for the gold.
Yes.
Volleyball.
It's slow-mo.
Amazing.
Slow-mo.
What has been your favorite part of the Olympics, by the way, Mark DiCarlo?
You know what, Patty? I'll tell you. When I was at college at UCLA, I interned at the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles.
What?
And I worked, I made commercials, I worked for a year and a half at the Olympics. So anything and everything about the Olympics really makes me, it's very moving, and it represents the best of humanity. So it doesn't matter, because there's inherent drama in every sport. And I watched field hockey for the first time, and I loved it.
I can't get into field hockey. What was it about? I mean, was it just the intensity of it? Because here's the thing. It's a big blue, like court, isn't it?
What's the difference between that and lacrosse?
And handball.
lacrosse, the stick has a little basket on it. Field hockey is like a stick and a ball, and it's like hockey played on a soccer field-ish.
And handball?
But you know what? It's the,
like
it's
stick
the training.
Soccer.
These people, they train for 4 years. In some cases, for 20 seconds of work.
Stick water polo.
Oh my God, water polo is brutal to watch too. By the way, because that is a lot of work right there.
Yes, it is.
Are they in water they can stand in?
No,
that's not.
No, they're doing what's called an egg beater.
You're tread water for 30 seconds.
But they're doing an egg beater kick, so their legs are alternating. Like, I'm sorry, I'm WGNRadio.com. You can watch me. Their legs are doing this motion the whole time.
Like a figure eight.
To keep them above water so that they can shoot like
that. Wow.
I played water polo one time intramural in college at Indiana University, and I learned you can't hold on to the opponents. Keep afloat.
Even if you're drowning.
Even if you're drowning, it's a penalty.
They will not allow that.
You just have to drown or go to the penalty box. Either one.
And Mark DiCarlo, when you were at the 84 Olympics, what were the events you got to see that year? Because there were some amazing moments then.
I was there when the men and the women's volleyball team won the gold.
Nice.
I traded a T-shirt that I had with an Italian volleyball player for one of his Italian shirts that I still have. With the Olympic rings on it. I did yachting, fencing, volleyball, and
one other one that I can't remember.
Was that the year the Russians boycotted coming to the United States?
No, we boycotted the Moscow Olympics in 80.
And then the Russians weren't in 84.
Right, they didn't come here.
They didn't come here.
They didn't come here.
They didn't come to Los Angeles.
Right.
Well, now that Trump will be president, we'll have good relations with them again.
Well, mostly with the daughters.
Yeah, his whole team is, it's good that we're making friends with the communists.
By the way, Mark, this is the only night of the week that we talk about Trump. I don't know if you have any thoughts on anything that he has said in the last week, including President Obama creating ISIS alongside Hillary Clinton, or the fact that Rudy Giuliani said that there were no terrorist attacks in the United States before the Obama presidency. What was the third thing that we heard? I can't. They're all so outrageous.
You know what? It was actually a good week, I think, because I'm starting to sense. I haven't understood his rise at all, and I can't believe that there's 30% of the people in this country that actually think he's suitable to do anything but stand in front of a mirror and kiss it. And I'm starting to sense that people are catching on that he's just utterly and totally full of it. And I'm hoping. And I'm seeing rays of hope that it's going to be a Barry Goldwater-sized ass-whipping in November. And I think that will... I can't wait.
A trumping, by the way.
Yeah, a thumping of the trumping. Mm-hmm. I just wait for that press conference after when he wins four electoral votes. What's he going to say?
And that was the map when Reagan won in 1980. Only Minnesota... it was 84 when only Minnesota went to Mondale.
Yeah.
Which will be interesting.
Which is his home state.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. My husband and my son, Griffin and Steve, really hate that I was saying yesterday, if the election was held today, there are always those conversations. If we voted today, yet they were saying that she would win 357 of the electoral votes, which seems a little bit drastic.
Yeah, if I was the GOP, I think I start to focus on
down the ticket.
Yeah. A little bit. You know what I mean? Well, let's try to win the House then. Try to keep the Senate.
Mark, is there anyone in California that is for Donald Trump? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, there's lots of people down in Orange County. It's a very Republican, conservative place. But you know what? Even the Republicans that I know, they're conservatives. They're not idiots. So they're not voting for Trump. You know, they're focusing their attention down ballot. I don't think any conscious thinking person can vote for him, and if they do, you don't understand democracy.
All right, Brandon, you can say something.
No, it's not that I disagree, because I really do. It's
you
just,
have relatives and friends.
I have people that raised me that I really respect as intelligent human beings. That if the power grid went off right now, they could start the new world. You know, these people can plant at the right time and can find wellsprings and can know how to hunt and fish and are just smart, and they built their own houses. And yet, they literally think that you're wrong, Mark DiCarlo. Like, and it's just sad. It makes me sad.
I don't understand it. I mean, I you know what? I understand what you're saying, and I know the same types of people. But I think it's some sort of delusion, or it's a racial issue. I don't know what it is, but honestly, you if you want to vote for Trump, you're an idiot.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just I'm not disagreeing. I'm just
but
sad.
But you can't call your family members.
I'm just sad.
I'm just thrilled that I didn't have to say that.
If you analyze what he says and what his first of all, he has no actual positions on anything.
No.
His whole thing is don't worry about it, I'll tell you later. And people swallow it because they don't. Here's the problem. Hillary Clinton is not well loved in this country. Any non-polarizing politician would have crushed him by now.
Well, a lot of it is Hillary has proven, and again, I don't agree with this. This is just what I hear because I'm related to these people. Hillary has proven that she's lying about things. So anyone but Hillary.com, Trump hasn't gotten the chance to prove that he's lying
about
things. I'm just
no. It's not. Here's the thing, because we take as a truth in America that politicians lie. So is it the lie that you don't like? Right? Is it the twisting of the truth that someone doesn't like?
Because no. You go to the fact checking sites, and 70% of what comes out of Donald Trump's mouth is a provable lie.
Oh,
I mean, that's a fact. So,
Mark, we have to go. My birthday's over.
Oh,
you have a contest on. You have a contest that I saw on Twitter. Real quick, where can people go to win free luggage?
Follow me on Twitter. You can win luggage. You can win a trip to Paris, and you can win a trip to someplace else that I don't remember.
Follow him on at Mark DiCarlo on Twitter and register to win a trip to Paris. Thank you, Mark. We'll talk to you later.
All right. All y'all have a great night.
All y'all. This
I don't say cyber place.